Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is April 15th, 2020. True to form, we had a frost last night, in spite of having temperatures approaching 90 degrees last week. Those of us who are experienced hands here in Nashville know better than to put out tender annuals before April 15th. But we've had a beautiful spring so far, with wonderful flowering bushes, trees, and ephemeral wildflowers. It's been several weeks since we last published a podcast episode. In the 3 years of doing these interviews, I've always done them live and in person with my guests. It appears now, due to the coronavirus pandemic, it will not be possible, at least for the near future, for us to do these live and in person. And so I hope you'll bear with me as we try to adapt to doing interviews remotely. The sound quality of today's recording is really not what I would like it to be, but I'm not an audio engineer and have never aspired to be one. On today's show, we welcome Heather Lose, the editor-in-chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. This magazine has been published continuously since 1937, really along with the foundation of the Tennessee Conservation Department of that same year. It has always been known for its stellar photography and thoughtful journalism on the broad subject of conservation. Heather has brought a renewed vitality to the magazine with her considerable experience in media, publishing, and graphic arts. For people who are interested in keeping up with what is happening in the world of parks and conservation here in Tennessee, the Tennessee Conservationist is a must. And so I hope you'll enjoy today's interview with Heather Lose. So Heather Lose, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
I'm just thrilled to have you. I know we had scheduled a time to get together a couple weeks ago, and we put it off because of this virus situation. And doesn't look like the virus situation is going to end anytime soon. So I decided we needed to go to a different strategy. So thank you for accommodating me on that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here, Mark.
You are the shakedown cruise, let's say, on remote recording of podcasts. I've done 60 or more podcasts over the last 3 years, and I've done them all in person. And so this is going to be a new trend, I have to think. So Heather, I want to talk with you today, I guess primarily about what you're doing with the Tennessee Conservationist. And welcome to the conservation community. I know you've been there, what, a year or so now?
Is that little over 2 years
okay,
now?
Right,
I started in February of 2018.
So I do want to, and it's kind of traditional in this podcast, to talk with people about their backgrounds and, you know, what inspired them to become involved in conservation. And you're coming at it from sort of a different professional angle. You're a graphic artist and designer, and that's in publication, and that those sorts of things are your background. But what is it that is in your background that attracts you to be working in conservation?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it's kind of the perfect job for me. My whole career has been in the media in one way or another, whether it was at Hits Magazine or the Nashville Scene or in radio. So I've always been very enthused. I don't know, it just kind of came as second nature to me to be a communicator.
Right.
I think just the way that I grew up with my parents, you know, we were always camping. We were always out in the Tennessee State Parks. We were always fishing and swimming and hiking and camping. We used to have a joke that every time the Loses went camping, it would rain. and it was kind of true. So, you know, with the prospect of working, you know, not only within Tennessee State Parks and the top-notch crew that's there, But then to be able to bring my talents for the media and typesetting and storytelling and kind of combine these two things together, it's a dream job for me.
Fantastic. Well, it's a fun place to work, that's for sure. You know, you mentioned your mom and dad and their influence on you.
Yes.
Your dad was an acquaintance of mine years ago when I worked in parks and recreation. And you know, if you were to enumerate, you know, memorable characters in your experience, he was among the top most memorable.
Yeah.
So your dad was a landscape architect, and one of the top people in the southeastern region, certainly. Tell us about your pop and what his influence was on you.
Well, I've always said he was a little larger than life, or he was
true
able
enough
to kind of turn that on. He had a little switch, and you know, he was the guy. He was always the guy in the room with the biggest smile, who was having the most fun, who everybody else wanted to talk to.
Super.
And you know, he grew up the son of an immigrant who started a nursery business. This is my grandfather, Arthur Lohse, started a nursery business called Lohse Brothers in Louisville, Kentucky. My father grew up around plant material, and they would sell Christmas trees, and they would sell these most beautiful, the German hand-painted ornaments at Christmas time. They kept bees. There's some family lore about how they had some stills,
gee.
In the days of Prohibition, which, you know, if you know my dad, that's perfect. I mean,
right.
he did like his whiskey. So, you know, he grew up around plants and, you know, caring for the environment and caring for the natural world. And so I think, I mean, it's something I don't even have to think about. It's just, that's how I grew up. My mother was a biologist. You know, we had the ecology symbol on the little sticker on the back of our corn cob yellow Volvo, you know, with the tents hauling the boat. And, you know, so the idea that you respect the earth, that you care for the earth, you know, that the word dominion doesn't mean domination, it means caring for and working together with, it's just, that's what my whole childhood was about. So I'm incredibly grateful to both of them, you know, for raising my sister Shelley and I. You know, I mean, we were grubby kids, man. I mean, we had mud between our toes and we had dirt under our fingernails and we had, you know, jars full of fireflies and we had jars full of tadpoles and.
Well, that's all just fantastic. I knew that your dad was from Louisville, but I did not know of that experience there in the nursery and that sort of thing. Of course, mm-hmm. that certainly informs a landscape architect in a big way. Anybody that's got a little experience and training in plant materials is well on the way.
Absolutely.
Your father was not an ordinary landscape architect in the sense of just identifying where bushes were going to be on in front of a house. For our listeners who may not be familiar, I know of several large projects that he was involved in, including the master plan for the Big South Fork National Recreation Area. Prominent in my mind is Riverfront Park here in,
absolutely,
in Nashville.
That's right.
I can remember the city of Nashville got a Secretary of Interior's discretionary grant which is a big deal among, you know, for the Secretary of Interior to go outside the process, so to speak, and just give money for a project. And so that project, and I remember Mayor Fulton was the mayor when that project happened, and Dick Fulton had been a member of Congress and had insisted upon Japanese cherry trees being along, being in the project, sort of as a token gesture to what goes on in D.C. and the Cherry Blossoms Festival. But and then I know your dad was involved with Cedar Creek Park in North Nashville and several parks, Zones River National Battlefield.
Yes.
But what I remember mostly about him was his involvement with the parks and recreation profession. Mm-hmm. He unlike any other of architects that we dealt with, immersed himself with us as professionals and considered himself an allied professional, was actually a member of the board of the National Recreation and Parks Association for several years.
That's right.
Which is a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to have been a member of that board, to tell you the truth. But you know, they purposefully brought people from allied professions into that board to broaden the scope of it and the influence of it. And man, you couldn't have picked a better person than David Lohse. So anyway, so that's a little bit about David Lohse. We lost him last year or the year before.
2 years ago. He
had retired and was playing golf overseas somewhere, as I recall.
Yeah, he had reduced his hours pretty significantly. You know, he was still doing the part of the job which he loved, which was going to conferences and conventions, setting up the party, you know, and schmoozing people.
Right.
But yeah, he had gone over to Ireland with my mom and some friends, and they were playing golf and, you know, drinking Irish whiskey and just imagine having a big old time. Right. And, you know, one of the nights they got back to the hotel room and went to bed, and he just left us.
Well, that's just so
just
sad.
Like that.
So sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Heather, on a happier note, what's going on with the Tennessee conservationists?
Well, Mark, I'm so glad you asked. You know, we're here in this past month, you know, we're all working remotely.
Right.
At the moment that we're recording this, you know, the COVID virus is out there and everybody's working from home. And so I'm here in my basement, little office space. Louise Zepp, our editor, is working out of her kitchen. Our art director, Jeff Law, is in Smithville, and he's working on his new laptop. So we are learning that we can use the tools at our disposal to put out this magazine every other month, which is kind of exciting. I was brought on board about 2 years ago to just take a look at this magazine, which has been published in one way or another since 1937.
Right.
So no pressure there, right? Like this magazine is, you know, people love this magazine and it has an amazing history. And Parks decided to take this magazine, which was sort of operating on its own, and pull it underneath the umbrella of Tennessee State Parks to give it a little bit more resources and just to kind of give it a home within the structure of TDEC.
Right.
So when they did this, I think they were just looking for someone who has some experience in publishing, you know, here in the Nashville area, who can write, who can design, to just come in, pull it apart, and put it back together. And so the first year that I was on board, that's pretty much what we did. We went and took a look at other publications, sort of what they look like, what kind of story balance might be appropriate for what we were doing, what kind of stories do we want to be telling. I mean, we really pulled the Tennessee Conservationist apart and then started putting it back together, okay. Starting with the logo. You know, we wanted something that was more reflective of Tennessee State Parks, maybe that looked a little fresher, a little younger. We went to a new paper stock, 100% post-consumer recycled paper. And what that means is that every bit of fiber in the magazine has already had at least one life as a phone book or a postcard, right, or a menu or something like that. So, you know, the idea that we are the Tennessee Conservationist, I thought it was very, very important that we walk the walk and that we show people of the world that it's entirely possible to produce a sustainable yet beautiful magazine. You know, I've heard people refer to the Tennessee Conservationist as Tennessee's National Geographic.
Okay.
The photography is incredibly important. And so what we had to do was find a mix of the right paper, which we did, and then we found the right method of printing on that paper, because the paper is matte. It feels right. Really good to your hands.
Right.
I've got one right here.
Right.
You know, and you want to pick it up. You want to leaf through it. The paper is relatively thick. It's just got a good feel to your hands. Typical four color offset printing, like how most magazines are printed and newspapers, is, you know, you run that paper through four different colors of ink: yellow, black, magenta, and cyan. And that's what little dots of ink, that's what how the photographs are printed.
Right.
Okay.
Usually so, on slicker paper.
It can be on glossy paper.
Right.
That's right. And so what that does is these little dots of ink, you know, they either seep down into the paper or they sit on top of the paper if you've got a coated paper. So we're starting out with this matte paper, which is really toothy, and it's got a lot of structure to it. You can really feel the paper in your hands. So I had to find a method of printing that would work with this paper to, in combination, to give us a beautiful magazine of these beautiful photographs of Tennessee, right? Which is what we want to see.
Right.
So we decided to go with one of the newest ways of printing. It's called UV, and that is ultraviolet ink. What it does is when the paper goes through the press, this ultraviolet ink goes down on top of the paper, and then it's cured immediately with an ultraviolet light.
Okay.
So what that means is that the dots of ink do not soak down into the paper, because they don't have time to.
Right.
So it sits right on the top of that paper, and what we get are these crystal clear images, because there's no sponge effect happening here at all. Those images just dry immediately, even in the most humid months, which is, you know, something that conventional printers have to look out for. So,
Heather, who does that printing for you here in...
We are printed up in Clarksville, Tennessee, by Jostens.
Okay, okay.
And these are the people that make the rings,
and the yearbooks.
And the stuff, right.
That's right. Yeah.
And they've got an arm. It's the biggest printer I think I've ever been in. It's giant. And they've got, you know, the professional arm, and they're doing books for country music stars and really museum quality, top-notch work. And they are wonderful partners to us.
You know, your story about the magazine being in existence since the late 30s. I do remember that, you know, historically the magazine was part of the Division of Educational Services within the Department of what was called the Department of Conservation at the time.
Okay.
And then it moved in several different places. When I was involved with it, we had a separate unit under the commissioner's office, which was called Cultural Resources. Mm-hmm. And it never moved into state parks, because we also had forestry, geology, archaeology, and all these other fields. And the thought was, well, we didn't want state parks to dominate, you know, the reporting and the coverage of what was going on in the field of conservation.
Right.
But the truth is that state parks and natural areas is the big dog. And that, and people want to hear about those things. So I guess as long as the editors and the people that are responsible for decision making about what's in the magazine are thoughtful about what they include and include those other things, mm-hmm. I don't think there's any issue about it being involved with parks. I mean, under the park's jurisdiction, so to speak.
We have a little bit of a formula that we try to, it's not a puzzle, you know, it's not like there's going to be a piece missing, but we do have a bit of a formula that we try to hit. But mostly we're trying to tell stories, and, you know, we just did a story on the Division of Archaeology and their 50th anniversary. You know, so there is a little bit of a formula there, you know, that we try to tell some stories about nature, tell some stories about critters. People love, you know, the big, beautiful photos and learning about butterflies or hummingbirds. We try to get some, just some human interest stories in. You know, there are just some incredible conservationists from the state of Tennessee, and right. We love lifting them up and telling them their stories. The park rangers and the park managers, I hear every day how much people are loving those little one-page biographies and learning about, you know, what is the path to becoming a Tennessee State Parks ranger? You know, how do you get into that profession? So, you know, we're trying to balance out every single issue and then also balance out the entire year, you know, just with a wide range of stories that are geared to helping people care like we care about the environment, and then to help them actually, you know, get out there.
Right.
Go see some stuff, go for a hike, go check out some of these prairies, go look at the old forest in Memphis, you know, go experience these things for yourself. So, you know, we've got the print edition that can come in people's mailbox every other month. The other thing we did is we expanded the offerings of the magazine to also include a digital edition. Which is there for anyone to read. One of the things that we felt like, you know, might have been happening is that our readership was getting a little older and we weren't pulling in the younger readers. And so we thought it was really, really important, you know, to kind of get them where they are, which is on their devices, on their phones, on their iPads. So we have a really terrific looking digital platform now. Where anyone can go and get these stories about butterflies or caves or, you know, whatever it is that they're interested in.
So, and to find that on the internet, you would just go to tennessee.gov?
tnconservationist.org.
Okay, all right. And you can, if you sign into there, you can see the most recent issue, or are you able to see past issues as well?
At the moment, you can go all the way back to January, February 2019.
Okay. Is there any consideration of having the archives of the magazine available?
That's something we've talked about, and okay. That is a stretch goal. Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it'd be so neat to be able to time travel like that and check in on what the parks were doing in 1937. I'd love to do that.
Right. Well, give that some thought. I from time to time have wanted to be able to find an old article. My friend Bobby Fulcher, who I'm sure you have gotten to know, has written articles for The Conservationist over the years. Mm-hmm. And some of them have been about natural things, and as you say, birds and butterflies. Other things have been about, folklore, which is his specialty.
Absolutely.
And he actually wrote an article some years ago about the Bradford pear and what a menace it was. I have searched for those articles, and sometimes they're hard to come by.
I need to find that article, because I agree with Bobby. He's 100% right about that tree.
Well, yeah, and I somewhere in the recesses of my filing system here, I probably have that. I may send it to you.
But, please do.
So, I want to tell you, I have enjoyed in reading the magazine, as you just said, the profiles of the park staff and rangers. We have some really, really talented folks out there in the 53 state parks and now the Natural Areas Division.
56
state parks. 56. I should correct myself. I think it's remarkable how much the state parks and natural areas have progressed in terms of professionalism and the kind of folks that they have working there.
I knew a lot about parks when I took the job. What I didn't know was how excellent the rangers and the managers are at Tennessee State Parks. You know, the training that they go through, the interpretive training to be able to tell stories, when they take people on hikes. They are responsible for people's safety. They are responsible for maintenance of the parks. That includes, the facilities at the parks, in addition to, if some trees come down or if there's flooding, the range of things that these men and women can do, they're just superheroes. They're just phenomenal human beings.
Well, Heather, they've always been top-notch human beings and people. But it wasn't until the mid to late 80s the institutional force got strong enough for us to convince the state personnel division that we needed to have college graduates in those positions and people with specific training in history and natural resources management and those sorts of topics. Because that's not what was happening before then. I mean, they're wonderful people, and many of them were very talented. Mm-hmm. But today's rangers have a sophistication that was lacking previously. And it's showing in the degree to which they're doing actual management of the resource there and understanding the biological characteristics of it's in the forests and the cultural resources that are at in some parks. So they're just doing a much better job. And I imagine that they're a resource for you.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah.
I would say probably half of the stories and the photography in each issue come directly from our rangers and managers. I mean, they are our boots on the ground, and if you think about Real Foot, you know, the sunrise at Real Foot and capturing, you know, the ice storms, the beautiful ice formations. You know, these are the people that are seeing these things every day.
Right.
So they're a huge resource for the magazine. I cannot overstate that.
Fantastic.
And we are so, so grateful that we have some rangers who are not only able to, you know, perform their duties, but also write for the magazine.
Right. And, and you know, to the, and also the powers that be in administration in parks is encouraging that kind of professionalism. So,
yes.
Yeah. They don't see it as something that's, oh, a nice to do. It's part of their job is mm-hmm. to do those sorts of things. So Heather, if a listener is interested in subscribing, they get onto your website, and what is the cost of a subscription? How does that work?
Okay, 1 year print subscription is $23. That's okay. Print only.
All right.
You can get print plus digital for $25 for 1 year. 2 year print only subscription is $39. And we will give you 2 years of print plus digital for $40.
All right. So excellent. Go. Excellent.
That's a bargain.
So Heather, I want to thank you so much for making the time to spend with us today.
And, oh, Mark, it flew by.
I enjoyed it so much. And, hopefully, you and I will stay in close touch.
I would like to get you to write for my magazine.
Well, we'll have to explore that.
Okay.
I don't know. What...
We're always recruiting, Mark.
Well, I certainly have an interest in doing that. So we'll have to talk about what kind of subject matters. At this
Fantastic.
Point, I'm getting to the point where the thing that I know most is about the history of what's happened previously. but I do get out to the parks, and I certainly have observations to make about what's going on. So
well,
Heather,
we're incredibly fortunate to have the parks here in Tennessee. And I, you know, before we go, I just want to point out, because I think this is so important. Tennessee is only one of seven states in the United States that does not charge an entry fee to our Tennessee state parks. So there's no income barrier for anyone who wants to take their kids fishing or hiking, or you want to go throw a frisbee around, or you want to go for a picnic. One of only seven states that keeps it free for families, just to go and experience. And of course, you know, we've got other activities and events and you know, planned things that aren't free, but just the ability to go to one of these 56 beautiful places and look at the water or watch the sunset. We really are fortunate.
Well, I couldn't agree more. You know, there was a period of time some years ago when there was a fee to get into certain of the state parks. Thankfully the powers that be made proper decisions and reversed that. Mm-hmm. Because that was the wrong way to go. You know, Tennessee parks have such a range of options. We certainly have the big facilities and the revenue producing facilities, the golf courses and the lodges and the campgrounds and those sorts of things that actually bring revenue in. But we do have a lot of parks that are not in the position to be big revenue streams. And those things are supported by our state taxpayer. It's an important thing, and you know, and what the conservationist is the place for people to learn about what's going on with their money.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're telling you the stories, and we've got a little feature in every magazine. It's called Things to Do, So we list not only things in state parks, but across the state, things going on. We've got conservation update where we tell you about just some cool things that we think our readers might want to get out and explore and experience. So it's a way to stay connected. And, you know, it's my hope, I don't know about you, Mark, but what I'm seeing is that, you know, over the past month, we've all been in our homes, working from home for the past month. And what I keep seeing on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram are, you know, people are just absorbing. They're going outside, and they are, that is kind of the saving grace of the virus is the ability to go outside during this most incredible springtime that we're having here in Tennessee. And I think people are really finding themselves, you know, reconnecting with nature and just understanding how important it is for our physical health and our mental health just to get outside and breathe and, you know, go see some trees and you know, maybe have a picnic or whatever. So it's my hope that after this whole virus thing blows over and we're all, you know, doing whatever comes next, I hope that people will continue to carry that reconnection along with them, and, you know, carry that zest once we're able to move about more freely, you know, to go experience some of these places that maybe you've never seen for yourself. Maybe you've just seen them in the pages of the magazine.
Well, yes, hopefully after this COVID virus thing passes over, people will still carry some of this invigoration for the environment and what's going on in the outdoors.
I hope so.
Heather, thank you so much for joining us.
Mark, it's been a pleasure. Right. Thank you so much. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, I'm going to stop the recording here.